Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, and I want to welcome you back to CMDA Matters, the weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Can you believe that it's already the first week of March? Well, after attending our Remedy 22 conference at California Baptist University in Riverside, California last week, I've been enjoying a few days of vacation out here in sunny Southern California. And the warm weather certainly has me ready for spring back at home in Eastern Tennessee. Well, on today's episode, I'm joined by Dr. Dean Bartholomew and Dr. Stephen Manning. These two family medicine physicians are leaders within our CMDA family medicine section. So I asked them to join us today to share more about their work in direct primary care. You may or may not be familiar with direct primary care and how that has evolved. So Dean and Steve are here to explain more about how it works and the benefits it has brought to their practices and their patients. I'm guessing that for many of you listening, as patient care professionals, what attracted you to medicine and clinical care are the same motivating factors that led Dean and Steve to rethink the way that they manage their practices in both Wyoming and North Carolina. At the end of each day for Drs. Bartholomew and Manning, it is about strengthening relationships with their patients and building a practice filled with patients and their families who trust them and know that they will be there for them when they need help. Well, I hope I now have you hooked and wondering what is their secret. Well, let's just keep listening and you'll find out shortly. Well, in CMDA Matters today, I have a couple of guests. Both of them are family physicians, and both want to talk to you today about a primary care model and about how fulfilling this has been. Let me just tell you a little bit about them. Dr. Dean Bartholomew is a family physician who's working in rural Wyoming. It's where he grew up. And then headed off to Nebraska for his undergrad work, and then graduated with honors from Creighton University School of Medicine. He served our country in the United States Air Force and left the Air Force at the rank of major. He ended up back up in his hometown of Saratoga, Wyoming, owning and operating a rural health clinic with the help of his wife, Tanya. And then in 2017, moved to northern Wyoming to help care for his parents. He eventually joined with the 307 Health Direct Primary Care in Powell, Wyoming. He has been very active, very helpful to us at CMDA. Because of his background in advocacy and leadership, he's been president of both Wyoming Medical Society and Wyoming Academy of Family Physicians in recent years, and he has been leading our family medicine section as the chair now for a couple of years. Joining Dean is Dr. Stephen Manning, who grew up in Williamston, North Carolina, and understood the value of hard work, working alongside his father in construction early on, and then decided freshman year of college that medicine was for him, and nothing was going to stop him from that goal. Graduated from East Carolina University in 2002 with his degree in exercise physiology. He married Candy, his high school sweetheart, and then went on to attend Brody School of Medicine at Eastern Carolina University and graduated in 2008. Then went on to family medicine residency at Brody School of Medicine and Pitt County Memorial Hospital, had a role of chief resident, and then graduated in 2011, has a great bio in terms of family care that followed. After being employed for 3 years, he felt that insurance-based practice was really dragging him down. And so he made the jump to direct primary care, our subject today, and started an independent family medicine practice called Access Medicine. So without any further ado, I want to welcome you, Dean, and welcome you, Stephen, to CMDA Matters today.
Thank you, Mike, for having us.
Thank you very much.
About what year, Dean, did direct primary care actually become an entity?
Well, I don't know the exact starts of direct primary care. I mean, it really has evolved out of concierge medicine, which has been around a little bit longer. But in terms of, you know, mainstream seeing it from state to state, really has taken off in the last 10 to 15 years, for sure.
It got on my radar as I was coming out after our national convention on Sunday about 3 or 4 years ago. I was walking out of the main hall waiting for my wife to pick me up, and there was seated a woman who greeted me. Dr. Chupp, I just want to thank you for the national convention. And hey, if you have a second, I just want to tell you that I've just made the most awesome transition of my life. And I said, oh, tell me about it. She said, I have started doing direct primary care, and it is the best. I can't believe I didn't transition 10 or 15 years ago. I'm so much happier. Life is better. The birds are singing. There's rainbows in my practice that I never had before. And I thought, wow, need to check out what this direct primary care is all about, if it's making such a difference. And for our listeners and for my benefit, could you talk to me about what this direct primary care setting is all about?
Well, so the basic premise of direct primary care is that it's a membership model. So the patient usually pays a set membership fee to the practice, and that can be monthly, quarterly, annually, whatever it might be, in exchange for care. And the reason that I moved to this model was because a lot of my colleagues, time is limited. The pressures are enormous on medicine. And the amount of things you can do in a setting with each patient is less and less. So I felt like I couldn't do my job with that time constraints. So I looked for another option. And direct primary care was that for me. So I transitioned back in 2014. And since then, it's so good that I've told patients that if I couldn't do this model, I would seriously have trouble going back to primary care, an insurance model, if I couldn't do this form of practice.
So, Dean, I understand it's not concierge medicine, but is that just a matter of semantics and price point, or are there other distinctives between the two?
In some ways, it's semantics. Concierge medicine, we all think of as a very high-priced product that only a select few can obtain. And what we call it concierge medicine for the masses, because the price point is different and it is very affordable. It's a change. It's going back to a primary care relationship between the doctor and the patient. We're removing the insurance company who has so much power these days in determining what kind of care, where you get it, and at what price. And so by removing the insurance company and getting back to that relationship where truly I work for my patient, my patient pays the bill and I answer only to my patient. And so by making this affordable to all people, we really do feel like it comes down to providing access. And I tell my patients, what you're really paying for on a monthly basis is you're paying for access to me. Our patients have 24/7 direct access to their providers. Here in our clinic, there's three of us, and we each have around 600 to 650 patients. And those patients are assigned to one of the providers. And so they basically have their cell phone number. So 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the patient has direct access to their doctor. After hours, it's not a phone call that goes to a nurse in California. It's a phone call or a text. And we'll talk about that probably a little bit more, that goes directly to me. And so the patient always has access, and that's what we're selling.
And is that 24/7? 7 days a week, 12 months a year. As I just think about that and taking calls as a surgeon and thinking about it, never stops.
Right.
How does that work?
That's the first question, right? That's the first question from every doctor is, oh my goodness, how do you do that? And it's very reasonable. So in our practice, we use texting, and it goes actually through our EHR. And so all of the texting is captured within the EHR straight off. And I think patients are very, very reasonable. Sometimes when we have new patients come on, I think they kind of test it out a little bit, text you at 7 o'clock at night and say, oh, hey, I need a refill or whatnot. But really, it's very reasonable. Our patients, I think, respect that. And usually every text starts with, I'm so sorry to bother you on the evening, or I'm so sorry to bother you, but Johnny has an earache, and what can we do? It's so rare that I've received a phone call after I've been asleep. Some mornings, you get a text a little bit early in the morning. Maybe somebody has a earlier schedule than you do and that they need a refill. But patients are very responsive to that. And in our practice, where there's three providers, if one of us is going to go out and here in Wyoming, we head to the mountains, and that's what we do. We'll sign over the phone to one of the other providers.
Stephen, I wanted to ask you, with primary care shortages in the United States. Definitely not enough family physicians, is my understanding. How difficult is it to just hold the line on your patient panel, since it sounds like that's really critical for your enjoyment of your practice?
Yeah, it is. And it's an important part of that aspect. And there are lots of different ranges. Some direct primary care docs will have 600 and some will have 1,000. I have a PA in my practice, and between the two of us, we have about 900 to 1,000 together. So, you know, one of the criticisms that we often hear is that because we have a smaller patient panel size, then we can't see as many patients that need our services, that are maybe the demand. But in reality, the other argument of that, or the counter argument, I should say, is that, you know, we feel like we can recruit a lot better for primary care when you have a doc who's able to really have a better work-life balance, and they enjoy seeing their patients. They have time with their patients. They enjoy coming to work and all those things. And so when you have that set up, and, you know, the medical students that I work with are smart. When they come into an office that they see a doc who's burned out, who doesn't enjoy being there, and they're considering primary care versus a specialty or something else, you know, they're not going to really seriously consider primary care as much, I think, in those situations when they see that setting.
Yes.
When they come to our practice and they see someone who enjoys what they're doing, they want to be there, and they have time with patients to enjoy the interaction with the patient. I've had students who are really dead set on surgery tell me that they would really reconsider primary care if they could do this model.
Wow.
So in my mind, we really can do a better job of recruiting more family docs, primary care docs, if we have models that can sustain a better work-life balance like this.
Well, for either one of you, what else comes with, besides access and besides you seeing patients, evaluating them? My understanding from looking online is that often you can give them medication. In most states, many states maybe, you can give them the medications that they need directly for low cost, x-rays maybe in facilities. What are the other things that come along with this monthly fee that patients pay?
For here in Wyoming, at our practice, we dispense generic medications. We can buy them in bulk and dispense them at our cost plus what it costs to get it here, just as an added on benefit, not as a moneymaker. And so we routinely can beat Walmart's $4 for 30 days, $10 for 90 day prescriptions. In fact, we have Medicare patients who it's cheaper for them to buy a generic medication from us than it is at the pharmacy using whatever coverage they have through Medicare. So we use that as an add-on benefit, and so they're paying just the cost of the medication, basically. We do have some lab work that we do in-house that's no cost, COVID tests, strep tests, some urine tests. In our practice, we don't have blood tests, so we use local health fairs as our main way of getting blood work done for cheap. And the other part of that I would add to this discussion is when I say I work for the patient, I do, and I work for their health care dollar. And so, you know, I'm not beholden to any hospital system that I have to order within. We can literally sit down and shop around. I know where I can get a CT scan for $400 or an MRI for $600, or I know where we can get an x-ray for a quarter of the cost versus a hospital, because it's the patient that I'm working for. It's not for a hospital system or an insurance company.
Steven, any difference in the arrangement for you there in North Carolina?
Very similar. We don't do dispensing in my practice, not because we can't, but because logistically, we just haven't started that yet. But the same as Dean said, we offer all those typically in-office tests for free with membership. We do draw our own labs in office, and most of our lab costs are $5 or less. We do injections, you know, spirometry, EKG, most everything that primary care offices will do. And most of those things are free of charge. We do charge, if things cost us something, we typically will charge the patient a small fee for it. But usually, as Dean said, those fees are typically pennies on the dollar compared to other practices
and
what patients will pay.
What's really critical here, what could be a pain point for patients, I suppose, would be, you know, when they have to go beyond and see specialists or ended up with emergencies. And so talk to us about your conversations with patients and what else they need on top of, you know, catastrophic coverage and obviously coverage if they need to be referred to a specialist, how that works. And for those who choose not to have that, how are you doing in terms of getting them in to see specialists when you realize that's necessary?
Correct. We do encourage patients to have insurance or some other type of coverage. We actually have a fair amount of patients who use some of the health share ministry options, and, mm-hmm. and direct primary care actually fits very well with that, because most of those health share options kick in after, you know, $600 per an event. So we fit the primary care side of that, the day-to-day, and then they have that add-on if need be. But yeah, we do absolutely have patients who don't have any insurance, and it goes back to working for the patient and trying to find a specialist that'll work with them and, you know, trying to get as much done as you can for their dollar.
Steve, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I would say about 60% of our patients currently have some kind of insurance plan. And a lot of that is, as Dean said, there are a lot of healthcare sharing ministries we use, our patients use, as well as high deductible plans. And as Dean said, we do encourage them to have some kind of insurance coverage for, you know, for hospitalization, serious illnesses, ER visits, those kind of things when needed. But patients can really be smart about it and look at different plan options that would really save them money when they make us their primary care. So a lot of options.
So just thinking back when I was in practice, let's say you were taking care of a patient, they did not have insurance and they needed their gallbladder removed. How do you work with me or with others of my colleagues to get those patients into an office without insurance and get taken care of? What's the fallback?
Several of our local hospitals, which are rural hospitals, they do have charity care programs and payment programs. And unfortunately, that's where some of those patients, you know, will end up, you know, having to get the care through some of those options. But, you know, locally, the surgeons that we work with and the all of our specialists are great about, you know, seeing these patients and helping them to set up some payment plans.
Have the number of DPC docs who've assimilated transitioned to this model, especially in family medicine, have they increased, decreased, or has the number, from your perspective, been stagnant?
It's increased. As far as the number of practices go, we were looking at this yesterday, and there's over 1,600 practices. When I started in 2014, there were probably maybe 400 to 500 at the most. So it's definitely increased.
Dean?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing it increase, and a lot of interest from doctors who contact us locally looking at, you know, at starting their practice. And you know, there's a lot that goes into that. There's a lot of decisions that need to be made for physicians who want to leave a steady income stream at a hospital system and kind of go out on their own. But, you know, it's a big step for somebody to do that and make that decision. But I think both Steve and I will be the first ones to be cheerleaders that it's worth doing.
With the research that I did online and reading some physician testimonies about how it's changed their practices, some of those testimonies remind me of sort of the freedom that I enjoyed serving in a mission hospital, the ability to take time and do spiritual ministry. So can you tell us any stories, either one of you, Dean or Steve, about how spiritual ministry can play a more significant role? Because our listeners care about that deeply, as you know.
I would say for me, that was one of the primary reasons that I looked for other options. When I felt like I didn't have time to deal certainly with even the medical issues with my patients in 15 minutes, let alone deal with spiritual and really deep, important things. So I decided a different way of doing that in primary care had to be there. So DPC was what I found. And what I do now is that I have time with each patient. I have 30 minutes or longer with each patient. I also schedule counseling sessions with patients. I did some training in biblical counseling before medical mm-hmm. school. Wow. and love it. And so I kind of bridge that into my practice. And so usually on Friday afternoons, I will have time where I can spend time with patients an hour or longer if needed and actually do some counseling. It's been a wonderful thing that I can stop and pray with patients and have time to do that and not feel like I'm so rushed that all I'm thinking about is the next patient to see. And for me, that was a big part of this.
I would agree. I can't emphasize enough the time factor when it comes to direct primary care. In our clinic, we start our days with hour-long appointments. And sometimes, you know, during COVID or flu, we have, you know, shrink those down a little bit, nothing more than 30 minutes. But just to give you a very quick example, last week, I had a patient, a young female who was undergoing genetic testing for a neurologic condition that is lethal by the time she returned. turned 60, and she's going to have a meeting with the geneticist to go over the reasons why she wanted this test. And they had recommended a family member to be with her or somebody else to be on the phone call just to, you know, another pair of ears to hear the information. And she asked me, she said, I really would like for you to be on that. And she said, I know that, you know, you taking an hour out of your day seeing other patients is a big deal, but would you be willing to do that? And I said, oh my gosh, I would be honored to do that. And so blocked my schedule for that hour with her, and, you know, got to be a part of that discussion. And her time with the geneticist went the full hour, and I did have a patient for the next hour, but we really needed to talk some more when she got done, and talk through everything that they had talked about, and even had a chance to pray when we were done. And as I was about 20 minutes late now, and with my next patient, and I mean, just really a heavy hour and 20 minutes. And so I walked into my next room, and my nurse had told them that I might be a little bit late, and I apologized, and my patient was like, oh my goodness, you know, Dr. Bartholomew, you do not need to apologize. We know that you're going to give your time to your patient. And we know that, you know, now we're, you know, you're going to be working with us. And it's the time and it's the relationships that you build with your patients, because you're just not moving them through. This is not, you know, as we always used to call it, the, you know, the cattle call, you're moving them through, you have hour long appointments, and obviously you're going to have time to get to know your patients.
What are the primary threats? Are there any threats? You know, we talk about a SWOT analysis. What are the opportunities? And I think I've heard opportunities that you can really grow this because it's really attractive to young healthcare professionals coming out of training, out of medical school. But what are the threats for the future of DPC or insurance companies lobbying for it to be outlawed?
We see a little bit of that. I know here in Wyoming, the two doctors that I joined with, they had to help move through some legislation that would say that direct primary care is not insurance, so that it did not fall under, you know, the insurance guidelines. And they've also worked with Montana just to get that done recently as well. So I think most states now, the vast majority have passed legislation like that. So that was one of the biggest hurdles, was to get DPC to be clearly viewed as it's not insurance. It is just medical care.
Steve?
Yeah, we're also, North Carolina, we're this, in the same boat now. Not every state has said that or passed laws yet, but I think most have at this point. There's also legislation been in the works for probably a few years now to try to make it so with the IRS that patients can use their HSA funds or similar account funds for those funds can be used for DPC practices. So we'd like to have that on the IRS list that would include that. So that's in the works. I think there's, for the most part, those who are in the advocacy realm for DPC would say that sometimes no legislation is better than bad legislation. So we're sort of operating under the radar in some sense to say, well, we don't really want people to just start scrutinizing, because when you often get those entities involved, they'll start to take away things that we really like. So in some sense, we are under the radar, but we probably like it that way.
Has anyone looked at the economics of this and compared your standard fare patient population with insurance of various kinds, and then look at a DPC with catastrophic insurance coverage, umbrella coverage, as a backup? Has anyone looked at the economics comparing the two?
We were a part of a Medicare pilot study a couple years ago. And what the study did was it compared DPC practices and performance on certain measurements, A1C, cholesterol management, hypertension, compared to the insurance practices. And we were sort of the experimental group and they were the control group. They wanted just to look at, were the numbers or was the control better? And last I heard, we blew them out of the water. No comparison. And Medicare itself has sort of been looking at the last few years, is there a way for them to pay a per member per month fee to the physician or practice to take care of their Medicare patients? And would it be more cost effective to do that? And I think they're still, you know, as we know, most government entities are very slow. They haven't decided that yet, but the numbers that we looked at and the numbers we were part of were very good, showing that we could provide better care ultimately. Yes, for less patients, but I would argue that, you know, there's no substitute for that. You can't have 3,000 patients and provide excellent care for all those people as one physician. So we would argue that you need less patients that you take really, really good care of and provide all that you can for them and manage their diabetes and their hypertension. And then you can basically have cost savings down the road as you're taking better care of them.
Steve?
Yeah, I agree. We've seen some studies out there, you know, talking about hospital admission rates, ER utilization rates definitely are much, much lower in direct primary care. But from, you know, a longitudinal total cost, I don't know that we have that out there, at least to my knowledge.
Last question for you, Dean and or Steve, because you're both in leadership in the family medicine section. Tell us just briefly about the section and how can people get involved and where do you need them to get involved within the family medicine section?
You know, currently we're really working to get this section off the ground and going. We've put on some monthly talks, last year. One of them was Steve and I giving this kind of same talk about DPC. So just trying to find some different speakers and ideas that would interest family physicians. Really, you know, I think we see our role is twofold. One is helping to get out the information from within the CMDA. You guys have worked so hard, nationally to put together Bridging the Gap and the Faith Prescriptions and some just awesome programs. And we're trying to get the word out on those programs. And we're kind of talking about maybe taking the Faith Prescriptions program and doing that as a monthly Zoom
great
gathering for the FMS membership. And then the other piece is continuing on the advocacy side. And so we do send out a kind of a monthly email kind of pointing out some areas that we're working on. And there's always the thought of, you know, somebody else is going to do this and somebody else is working on this problem. And when it comes down to what's happening at the AAFP and other levels, we can no longer sit on the sidelines. We are getting steamrolled in some of these areas. And I just cannot emphasize enough how important it is that we need numbers. It's not asking a lot. We're not going to ask you to, you know, to travel to Washington, D.C. and give a speech. We just need numbers. So when we can push back at the AAFP and say, instead of 600 people, we have 6,000 or we have 60,000 people who are pro-life or who are for this or against that, it makes a huge difference. And so we can't stay on the sidelines anymore. The game is going to blow right by us if we do.
Steve, any closing comments?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's been helpful for me too is just meeting together with colleagues who are like-minded and who are believers and with a common goal. Our desire as physicians is to show a lot of Jesus in our life. And so just being able to meet together, encourage each other in that way, and also spread that light to these areas, to the AFP and to wherever we are. So it's been really pivotal for me.
Well, I trust that there will be opportunities also for those who are part of that section to be connected with med students and with residents who are coming through the ranks interested in primary care to be linked up with an experienced Christ-following mentor. That's certainly at the top of our list of priorities at CMDA, and we want that for every specialty. That's another reason that we would love to be able to have engaged primary care physicians who can mentor the next generation. Whether or not they end up choosing, like you, DPC or not, I think is probably a secondary issue. I'm sure you'll agree in that they put comprehensive patient care. And love is spelled time, I've heard it said. Love is spelled time. And you both have described for us your ability to spend more time with people and take care of their needs. God bless you both. Thank you, Dean Bartholomew and Steve Manning, for taking time out of in the middle of a workday to share with all of us at CMDA and CMDA Matters your practices. What's the email there for the section? How can people reach out to you, Dean?
It's familymedicine@cmda.org.
That's simple. God bless you both. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
As we near the end of our conversation, both Dean and Steven shared briefly about CMDA's family medicine section. If you're not familiar with that group, the Family Medicine section is about educating, encouraging, and equipping Christian family medicine physicians, as well as residents, to show the love and compassion of Jesus Christ to our patients and their families. They strive to use biblical principles to guide competent, compassionate, and scientifically sound family medicine, and to live as a reflection of the image of God, testifying to His grace and sharing the eternal hope we have in Him. The Family Medicine section, often shortened to FMS, is highly engaged within CMDA. If you are in family medicine, I would encourage you, get involved with these leaders. They send out a regular e-newsletter that highlights resources that will be beneficial to you, and they also have monthly Zoom fellowships that you can join. To learn more, visit cmda.org/familymedicine or email familymedicine@cmda.org. The Family Medicine section is just one of several groups on CMDA's growing list of specialty sections. Among all of our various ministries, CMDA's specialty sections give you the unique opportunity to equip, network, and fellowship with colleagues in your specific healthcare specialty. These are organized by our CMDA members, and the sections provide a wealth of resources for those who wish to connect with your colleagues. If you missed our first episode of 2022, back in January, we actually focused on the new CHECK section, which stands for Christian Healthcare Executive Collaborative. Among our 14 specialty sections include, for example, the Fellowship of Christian Physician Assistants, the Coalition of Christian Nurse Practitioners. We have a psychiatry section, an ultrasound training section, and many more. I hope you'll be able to find a section for your specialty. Just visit cmda.org/specialty sections. One other thing I'd like to mention is how the Family Medicine section is involved in our CMDA advocacy efforts. Specifically, they have taken on an active role within the AAFP, the American Academy of Family Physicians, for those of you who are not in family medicine, to help influence that organization for God's kingdom. They're also actively involved with the Physicians for Life member interest group within the AAFP that seeks to build an influential group of pro-life physicians from different spiritual as well as secular backgrounds to help influence AAFP policy in a pro-Hippocratic manner. Well, out of the 133,500 AAFP members, only approximately 700 pro-life physicians have signed up for this member interest group. I know that there must be so many more pro-life physicians out there. So if you have decided to stay a member of this secular body in order to be salt and light, be sure to contact the Family Medicine section to learn how you can get involved today. Dean and Stephen both gave you, our listeners, a challenge to get more involved with CMDA's advocacy efforts. We're actively engaging state by state, as well as in our nation's capital, on issues such as abortion, assisted suicide, protecting children from gender transitioning treatments that are being promoted by progressive LGBTQ activists, and so much more on both state and federal levels. As they said, we can't sit on the sidelines anymore. In fact, we have responsibility from Christ to be defenders of our faith and of truth, caring for the least of these all along in the public square. If you'd like to get more involved with our CMDA advocacy efforts on either a state or federal level, please contact communications@cmda.org. Our team would love to hear from you and find a place, especially for you, to make a difference. I was personally encouraged by our guests today as they talked about direct primary care, helping them find a greater work-life balance. And that has allowed them to spend more time with each patient, time that they can spend addressing spiritual issues for their patients. I think Stephen even mentioned that it gives him the opportunity to schedule counseling sessions with patients in order to dive deeper into issues that his patients are having. Healing the bodies and souls of patients through the skills and the knowledge that God has given us through his power is exactly, I think, what we're called to do at CMDA. When we focus on healing our patients both physically and spiritually, that has great kingdom impact. And that's why CMDA recently produced Faith Prescriptions. I think you've heard me talk about this on the podcast many times before, so I hope you're taking advantage of it on our CMDA Learning Center, because it's free if you're one of our CMDA members. This is an on-demand video study specifically designed to help you live out and share your faith in your practice. It provides training on everything from LGBTQ issues in the healthcare arena to praying with your patients and sharing your faith in ethical, efficient, and appropriate ways with both your colleagues and your patients. You can get started now. Just visit cmda.org/learning and look for Faith Prescriptions. Well, you might have heard Dr. Bartholomew briefly mention Bridging the Gap. That's a curriculum that you might just want to learn more about. It's a small group study intended to bridge the gap, so to speak, between medical science and the church in America today. I just finished actually week 3 at my own home church here in Bristol. I'm team teaching that course with a local internist in our Bristol hospital. And we have both found healthcare and non-healthcare attendees from our church very engaged in these first few weeks, as I covered the introduction on bioethics and then 2 weeks on beginning of life issues. You know, you or your pastor or a lay leader can download easily the curriculum that has PowerPoints as well as facilitator and resource guides. They're all included at cmda.org/bridgingthegap. Well, while out here in California, I recorded a special interview with one of the speakers at Remedy 22 Conference. I invite you back next week as I chat with Jennifer Zamora. She authored one of our recent CMDA Today cover articles, and she's doing some incredible things with students as they serve the underserved doing street medicine. I can't wait for you to hear all about it next week. As always, if you want to suggest a future guest for the podcast, please email me using cmdamatters@cmda.org. And if you like our podcast, as I remind you each week, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and share us on your favorite social media platform. We've started closing out our podcast episodes with a brief encouraging testimony from our CMDA members and how this ministry is making a difference for them. Well, recently a student member shared this with us, quote, "I love how CMDA not only provides Christ-centered resources, but also connects brothers and sisters in Christ together. We need each other on this journey. I look forward to learning your stories and facilitating ways that we can lift each other up, echoing the rock-solid hope and greater purpose we have in the Lord," end quote. Well, I hope today's episode has shown you a new way that you can connect with your brothers and sisters within CMDA. As you connect with Christians in healthcare who are on the same journey as you, you'll find new ways to bring the hope and healing of Christ to the world through your practice in healthcare. That's absolutely what matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. We'll see you next week, God willing.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.